Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast, episode 952, titled Like That. We'll talk about that later on in the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, coming to you on a Wednesday. A busy, busy week in general. There's a lot going on, not only in the world of sports, but also the world of pop culture, hip hop. You know, we'll talk about what's going on with Diddy. His house is being raided, multiple houses being raided on Monday. But we're going to begin with the NBA. We're going to move into deep dive as you have a young team that's emerging, maybe not to do damage seriously as far as contending, but it's always fun watching a team developing, improving, and really showing some mental toughness. And the Houston Rockets are doing all of that. They are 10-1 in their last 11 games. They have a number two offensive rating and a number six defensive rating during that time period. Jalen Green has been spectacular in the month of March. He is averaging 28-5-5 with 50-40-80 splits on, you know, shooting, 3-point percentage, and free throw. The way he's shooting from the free throw. And most importantly, the thing that got him on the floor is his defense. He has considerably took a jump defensively in comparisons. Now, it wasn't hard for him to improve on his defense over the course of his career. This is his third year, and he had been basically like one of the worst defensive players in the league, to be perfectly honest with you, and I'm not exaggerating. That's how bad he was defensively. Bad shot taker, turnover, high turnover, you know, a bunch of turnovers, immature, but he's really like, you watched him during this, and I've watched some of their games recently. He has really taken his game to I'm not going to really put him in the All-Star game, but he is going up a level, a peg, taking a step up recently, especially in post All-Star break, where he's averaging 24 points a game in comparison to like 18 points pre All-Star break, taking better shots. Again, taking the challenge defensively. And they're doing this without their best player, Sengun, who, you know, was having a all, and he probably would probably have probably a serious candidate to be on an all NBA team. He's having that type of year. The league is so deep, he probably won't make it, but especially with this injury now, he's definitely not gonna make it because he's gonna miss. He's not gonna reach that 65 game threshold to make some of these teams. To make that all NBA first team, he has a chance. I guess you don't have to play 65 games to make second or third team, but I think more than likely he probably won't be on there. But he certainly was having an all NBA caliber year, and they've been 10-1 without him. They play tonight. They play a Thunder team without Shea, without SGA. So a game that they probably should win, considering that SGA who is the Thunder's best player and a top three MVP in his own right, won't be playing. And right now, Houston is putting the pressure on Golden State. There's no question about it. They came into this game just like a half game behind Golden State in the standings. They are, you know, young, talented team with a lot of that has been with some veteran players that have really made the difference. You know, I'm not a fan of him, but he does defend. Is a tough player in terms of Dylan Brooks. We know Fred VanVleet. VanVleet is a champion, excellent defensive player in his own right, and can, you know, knock down an open shot, and has a, you know, is a guy who they brought. You know, you brought two adults in the room to a Rocket locker room that, you know, frankly was chaotic last year. Like, you know, you had a bunch of young, talented players who didn't have a clue in terms of how to play basketball. You know, they would play some exciting games and have, you know, moments where you say, hey, this team's got potential. But then, you know, you looked up and they were in the lottery once again. Well, this team, after getting off to a relatively good start, they hit a low in the mid, you know, in, say, January, when February looked completely out of it, but they've had obviously a big March, and you know they are going to be fighting for a playing spot, and it would be huge for that franchise to make the play-in. That would be a major step for them to just make the play in. Even if they don't, even if they got in the play in and lost the first game and didn't make it to the playoffs, like you're a franchise. Like Oklahoma City was in the play in. Shit, maybe the year before last. I want to say were they in the, I believe Oklahoma City was in the play in maybe a year ago or last, a year before last. But again, those games, those are playoff caliber games. Those games matter. And for a franchise that has, since James Harden and that whole situation, since he left and forced a trade to Brooklyn a couple of years ago, a franchise that has been, a laughing stock in essence and has just been stockpiling young players and talent, they can really not, I'm not gonna say cement their future, but really take a major step in terms of the future of their franchise if they were to make the play in, and especially coming out, especially doing it without their best player. Now they're not better without Sengun. He is clearly their best player. There's no question, no two ways about it. I don't. It's just the fact that they do have a lot. They have some young talent. They have a guy in Jalen Green, like I said, who's playing like an all-star, and they have some veteran players who, been in some playoff games, and a guy like Van Fleet again, who's a champion, and more importantly, Ime Udoka is coaching his ass off, like holding people accountable, holding Jalen Green accountable for defending. They have a few of the same players they had last year. It's not a complete turnover in terms of the roster, but they made, listen, it was some, no Kevin Porter. That was a addition by subtraction. And then you add, like I said, the two veteran players in Van Fleet and also Dylan Brooks. So they're going to be interesting to watch down the course of the regular season, the rest of the season, especially with Golden State, kind of hanging on by a fingernail, and really not like, Golden State. Listen, I think we'll talk more about Golden State later on, but it is not out of the realms of possibility that I would not be surprised, or shocked, let alone surprised, if Golden State. If Houston catches Golden State for that final playing spot, like Golden State, the vibes are not good for Golden State right now. Golden State, Draymond just got kicked out of the game this evening against Orlando. Last time I checked, they were up by 8 at halftime, I think. We'll see if they can hang on against a very good Orlando team in Orlando. I think the game was in Orlando. I think the game, I believe it was, but Golden State right now, just, they don't. They can't. They're struggling to score. Like with games where Steph Curry does not go crazy, they have a hard time scoring. They don't have a consistent second scorer. The Wiggins thing, Wiggins again being out, that hurts, to say the least. Warriors are about 14 right now, so they look like, they've kind of rallied the troops, so to speak, in this particular game. And still a lot of time. That game is at Orlando, about 12. We'll see, it's a lot of time in that game, so we'll keep that in mind. And Curry not having Wiggins. Wiggins is back now, but Wiggins has missed time, had missed some time. You have a situation where, just listen, and again, well, I don't want to step on the and what we'll talk about later with Golden State, but it. The clock is ticking on them, to say the least. Right now, you just don't have any faith in what they can do. But we'll talk about more about them. Again, Houston, fun team to watch. They are defending. They're playing at a faster pace, getting easy baskets, and Jalen Green has a chance to be a future all-star for sure. We never questioned Jalen Green's talent. It has never been questioned. It's just been, it was just a matter of, the culture for Udoka. It may do Udoka got there before, you get two veteran players there. The culture was some shit, and there was really no leadership and nobody to show Jalen Green how to be a professional and how to, how to compete at, at this level. Now they have that, and we're seeing him, and again, to his credit, he's kind of we know about the off the court stuff, and not in terms of criminal stuff, but with who he's dating, who he's had a baby with. He's kind of moved that aside as far as and kept maintaining his focus. And right now, playing without question, I feel the best basketball of his career. Going around the NBA, we're talking about Golden State and the dynasty possibly being done. Well, the dynasty to me is done. This version of it. Now, we've seen Golden State pull off these wild moves in the past. The Kevin Durant thing, something like that is not going to happen. I don't know what Golden State will have up its sleeve in this offseason, but they right now, Golden State, listen, these dynasties don't normally end well. If you look at the horse, you look at the course of of NBA history. Put the Bulls aside because we never got to see them. They were, broken up, and we never got to see them conquer or get old or what have you. So put them aside. Celtics got old. Detroit handled them, and they were never heard from. Basically, never heard from again as far as being a championship contender, right? I'm talking about the Celtics of the 80s. You see what happened to the Lakers, with see what happened to the Lakers. And I ain't talking about Kobe and Shaq Lakers, but even the Lakers that went to with Kobe, they go to back to back. They go to three straight finals, win back to back championships. 2011, they get mollywopped by Dallas, get swept. And then 2012, run into a young upstart Thunder team, which ends up making it to the finals. And the Lakers at that point would never heard from again with that in terms of Kobe Bryant and that. And from that standpoint, they would never heard from again. And that was it. These dynasties normally end and they end with a thud. I can even go back to the Lakers with Magic. Getting swept by Detroit in 89. Pistons getting swept by the Bulls in 91. After three straight finals and all those battles with Bird, Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and what have you, and even with the Bulls and those in the younger Michael Jordan years. So dynasties don't end well for the most part for these teams, and especially in the NBA as teams get older. The NBA right now, especially the Western Conference, is loaded. With a lot of talent, if you can't score the basketball, you're gonna have a difficult time in the Western Conference. So they have a two-pronged problem. Not only are they not scoring, not only are they not scoring the basketball. I mean, look at Golden State right now. They rank seven. They 7-8 in their last 15 games. They have a rank 18th offensively, offensive rating, 19th defensively, defensive rating. In their heyday, those ratings would be top 10, normally a top three offensive rating, normally a top five, between a top five and top 10 defensive rating when they were right. Even in 2022, they had a top three defensive rating. And offensively, we knew that there was like defending their offense was like defending, there was no other offense like Golden State's. In terms of how hard it was to defend those actions. LeBron talked about it on his podcast with JJ Redick this week in terms of some of the hardest actions to defend, and Golden State was up to certainly right there. Nobody ran an offense like as unique as them. Nobody had the personnel to run the offense. Nobody has a Steph Curry. So, that day is done right now. They, offensively, again, they lack shooting, they lack size. And I don't think it matters if they do make the playoffs, if they do somehow survive, make it to the play-in. I just don't see what Golden State, I don't see Golden State winning a round. I don't see them getting through the play-in, to be honest with you. I don't see them getting through the play-in. There's no way right now Denver's number one seed. There's zero chance. They have zero chance of beating Denver in a 1-8 matchup, in the first round matchup. Zero. Less than zero. So I don't trust Golden State against any of the top teams, really, in the Western Conference. I wouldn't like them against Minnesota. I wouldn't like them against Oklahoma City. I know everybody wants to pounce on Oklahoma City, but Golden State, the Lakers match up well with Oklahoma City because of the sides. And Anthony Davis. Golden State doesn't have an Anthony Davis. So they like Golden Like Oklahoma City can add, and Golden State turns over the ball like crazy. Oklahoma City plays off your turnovers. It turns those into instant offense. That would be a tailor-made matchup for Oklahoma City. Tailor-made. So I just think Golden State, they'll play out this year. You will see if you can, maybe make a one ditch playoff, make it to the playoffs and say, see if Steph gets on a, on a heater and can maybe you get to a game seven. I'm struggling here with trying to figure out a scenario where Golden State is relevant in the spring, and I just don't see it. I just don't see it at all with them. Celtics Bucks had some in the last 2 days. I've had the Celtics on Monday. It was the Bucks yesterday. Just horrific regular season losses. Then do with the Celtics one first. The Celtics only become the 10th team in NBA history to blow a 30-point lead. A 30-point lead in regulation. They were up by 30 points against the Hawks. Hawks have no Trae Young. Now, in all fairness to the Celtics, their starting backcourt was out. White, Derrick White, Drew Holiday were both out. But still, you still have Jalen Brown. You still have Tatum and Brown and Porzingis. Okay. Those are probably, the three have been your three best players this year. And the way they blew the lead, it's like it was a classic Boston from the standpoint of you go to the fourth quarter, they scored 22 points, 17 of them by Brown and Tatum. Tatum and Brown don't get to the free throw line in the fourth quarter. No one else was a factor. There was an 8 second violation, but Tatum just bad, horrible, just bad shot selection. They had an 18-point lead at halftime. It was just one of those losses that you can't believe what you're watching because again, Atlanta has nothing to play for. Atlanta is one of these franchises that has a zillion, million and one questions. That they're gonna have going to the offseason. They're not contending for anything. They're not even like the best thing for them would be not to make the playoffs. That would probably be the best thing for them because they're not even with the play-in, that would be a waste of time. Who knows what happens what's gonna happen with Trae Young in the offseason. I would try to move him myself. But Atlanta has no motivation. They're not a young and up and coming team. So it's not like they have like Houston. And they're trying to get trying to find their way and trying to just play hard and get some reps as far as moving towards the future. They are in no man's land. That franchise is in no man's land right now. So for the Boston Celtics, a team with championship aspirations, a team that's in essence favored to win the championship, for them to blow a 30-point lead is a telling sign. And I don't look. It's hard to get excited about one or get too low about one regular season loss, but we are in March, okay? We're in late March, it's April. These losses, the playoffs have already begun in essence. The playoffs have already begun in essence for a lot of teams. Not only teams that are chasing playoff spots, but teams who have championship aspirations. Right now, you are what you are. There's no changing it up. There's no you're going to get better from now to April. No, you are who you are right now. Unless somebody comes back, like Minnesota's team will change dramatically when they get Karl-Anthony Towns back. He's, their second best. He's their second leading scorer. So that putting that aside. But, Phoenix is who they are. Is who they are. Golden State, Lakers, all those teams we've seen are who they are. Milwaukee, or we'll talk about them in a second. You are who you are at this point. So it's just a matter of staying healthy and trying to gather some positive momentum going into the playoffs. And I am not like that Celtic again. I'd be curious to know the last time has a team ever won a championship blowing a 30-point game, 30-point lead in a regular season game. I would be curious just to know that just for just something, just to know, because I think that I've expressed it. We've expressed this in previous podcasts, talking about the Boston Celtics. I don't completely trust this team. There's just something about this team. I got to see Mazzulla in a playoff run. I got Tatum again. And again, that's a game where Tatum, if you are a first team All NBA caliber player, you're an MVP candidate. He'll be a top. He's definitely a top five MVP candidate. He won't win. He doesn't deserve to win. But you're a top. Jason Tatum is legitimately one of the top six or seven players in this league. He's just to me outside the cusp of that top five of a top five player. But at worst, he's six or seven for. He's in between that six and eight range. You can't let your team lose that game. I know he put up big numbers overall, but still. If you had to score 40, if you had to score 50, you can't let your team lose that game. Mazzulla, as a coach, was never able to, stop the bleeding. These are things you look for at this stage in the season with teams who have championship aspirations. Look how Denver's playing right now. Look how Minnesota's playing right now. We'll talk about them later on. So if you want to know who's for real, look no further than how teams are playing right now going to the playoffs. There's no on and off switch in sports anymore. Look at the NFL, look at the NBA. You don't have a great regular season, a bad regular season, and all of a sudden become a great playoff team. It's not going to happen. This is not going to happen. What the Lakers did last year, that was an absolute aberration for the most part. They caught lightning in a bottle. A lot of things had to happen from that standpoint for a play-in team to make it to the NBA, to the Eastern West Conference Finals. That was an aberration. Again, if you're playing well, if you are playing well down the stretch or playing poorly down the stretch, it's going to explode. It's going to show itself in the playoffs, and it's not going to be this on and off switch that you're able to turn on. No team has that switch, by the way. As far as the Bucks, they might even have a worse loss, to be perfectly honest with you. They're at home, no LeBron James. They're up 19 points in the fourth quarter. They were up 19 points. You make Austin Reeves look like Larry Bird, okay? Anthony Davis is out there looking like Wilt Chamberlain. And the Bucks lose a game that they 100% absolutely had no business losing. Second time this year, or second time in a couple of weeks, in less than a month, that they lost to the Lakers without LeBron James. Absolute inexcusable loss. You look at the Bucks down the stretch in the fourth quarter for whatever reason. Giannis didn't touch the ball basically in the last 3 minutes. And I'm not just talking about shot attempts. I'm just talking about touches. This game with the overtime, with the double overtime, I give the Lakers a lot of credit. Anthony Davis finally stands up to Giannis. You look at some of their previous matchups, he had absolutely been dominated by Giannis. And it looked that way in the first half, as Giannis had a big first half while Davis was struggling with his shot. But Davis picked it up. Again, had a tremendous rebounding game. I think he had 32 and 21 for the game. Austin Reeves had a big game. D'Angelo Russell, who's played well over the last 15 to 20 games or so. As LeBron is resting that ankle, and the Lakers go on the road on this road trip and get a very much, much needed win in Milwaukee. And again, inexcusable loss for the Bucks. It's not even so much about the standings. It's just so much about a game that you just can't lose. And again, the Bucks, the two things that do the Bucks in, fourth quarter execution and horrible defense. You look at the last play, Austin Reeves, the play in regulation. Great play call, by the way, by Darvin Ham, but it made it, you made Darvin Ham look like Red Auerbach with that play call, because Austin Reeves was wide open. There's no way, with the game being tied, that a player should be that open. There's no way, especially when you have, no LeBron James to worry about. None. No LeBron James is on the floor. So give the Lakers a lot of credit. The Bucks, again, every time you want to trust them somewhat, they had a great win over Oklahoma City last week. They have a game that just has you scratching your head. And they've had a number of these games, head scratching losses that just don't make sense. It absolutely does not make sense, some of their losses that they've had this season. So some concerns, major concerns to me about these two teams that came into the year being favorites to go to the NBA Finals, two of the three favorites along with Denver in terms of winning the championship, and two teams that possibly could meet in the Eastern Conference Finals this year. Though I have more confidence in the Celtics than I do the Bucks, but two teams that certainly, despite the star power that they have some very much glaring weaknesses, especially in the midst of close games and down the stretch, in the fourth quarter. So Monday, you see, we had Diddy's homes getting raided in L.A., two homes in Miami, a home in L.A. by Homeland Security. Of course, everything that's going on with Diddy over the past few months for the Cassidy lawsuit. There was another lawsuit that came. There's a number of lawsuits that are out right now. It's just, open season with Diddy, to be honest with you. Now, again, no official information has come out. All we know that this was a raid by New York Homeland Security. We know that the feds are not to be fucked with. We know, like, the feds, when the feds come for you, their case is like they have basically a 95% conviction rate. They have done their due diligence. They don't just come out of nowhere. Like they don't come with random raids just out the blue from a standpoint of without solid concrete evidence or without a case they feel like is stone cold. They come for you. They come in for you from a standpoint of we feel like we have something. We feel like our case is more than solid. They were in his home looking for information, phones, laptops, flash drives, things of that nature. Again, the speculation on why they were there. One of the sources say that it's because of the alleged sex trafficking. Again, we don't know exactly why they chose to raid three of his homes. He wasn't there. He was on vacation, head towards the Bahamas. I think he's back in Florida today. His sons were there. Justin and King were there. They were now again. They were handcuffed, but they were not arrested. So it's a difference. They were just detained, and they were back at the property a couple hours later. So again, we know that the feds are not to be played with. The feds took 17 years to develop evidence on Jam Master Jay's 2002 murder. So they took 17 years before they kind of developed, before they came after the people from that standpoint. So they will wait. They will play the long game. They are absolutely not in a rush from a standpoint. They're not responding to public pressure or responding to the feds have a case. They chances are they more times than not, they're looking, they have you in a position where you will want to plea. That's how solid that those cases are. Their cases are normally are. Where you're going, where you probably would be in your best interest to take a plea there. And the question about this is, what I wonder what hip hop's reaction will be when, because it's a matter of time, when Diddy does completely just fall. Like right now, he's falling. He hasn't, hit rock bottom yet. But when it's coming, it's coming. He's going to hit rock bottom. Like this is just the tip of the iceberg. The feds coming after him. It's he's like, yeah, he's going to fall. He's going to fall. And I don't listen, jail. I think that it is very much a possibility that he could go to jail. I think that is absolutely on the table. That's absolutely on the table. This, I mean, again, these are federal people coming after him. Again, no charges have been, he has not been detained. He hasn't been arrested. But this case is, you have, he has cases on case, top of cases going against him. Again, it's a different animal when the feds come for you. So completely different animal. They have unlimited resources, just like he has a lot of resources. And right now, hip hop and Hollywood are very quiet for the most part. You don't hear people coming out saying basically anything outside of the, you know, Black Twitter or outside of YouTube channels making content off this and what have you. You don't hear too many people who are anywhere near connected to Diddy saying anything. And that silence speaks volumes. You don't hear people knocking him, you don't hear people defending him. So we will certainly see what happens with this. Again, this is going, the feds absolutely play the long game. This is, you know, this is basically just getting started. Again, I definitely can see, I can see, absolutely can see jail time. There are some reports about revolt and him selling his shares of revolt. That is not, that report is not, TMZ did a report. First of all, that is not official yet. Let me make this clear. That deal has not been finalized. I know it's being reported. Sources are saying this, sources are saying that, but that deal has not been finalized. It hasn't. So keep that in mind. It's probably going to happen, but it hasn't been finalized yet. So keep that in mind. You know, a lot of these, you know, black websites are running the story as if the deal is has been set in stone. The deal is not. It has, if you do your research on it, in terms of the reporting, it has not been final. The deal has not. Revolt has not announced anything. Have you heard anything from Revolt? Have you heard anything from, you know, Diddy? No. Have you heard anything from the perspective, the alleged new owner? No. So you hadn't heard, if you haven't heard from Revolt, Diddy, or the new owner, then there's no deal right now. Like, this is all there is to it. No one has, nothing's been made official. So I think, you know, this kind of report early without all the facts. I mean, this is the era we live in, unfortunately, where journalism just, you know, it's not too many, there's not too many, not too much great journalism going on. Just a bunch of, you know, just talking heads and a bunch of just a lot of bullshit going around, even by some reputable journalists. I mean, TMZ came out with a report that I saw, and again, no one from Revolt, no one from Diddy, no one confirmed this. So, no, like Diddy nor Revolt confirmed this, nor the person who allegedly is the new owner who bought Diddy sh shares. So this has not been confirmed yet. So let's keep that in mind as well. Sweet 16 will be resumed tomorrow. You have a number. You still have all the number one seeds left in the Sweet 16. You have a number of, the ACC has four teams left. Connecticut still is the favorite to win. You know, there wasn't that many upsets in the tournament over the weekend. It was, you know, it was solid, but I'm not, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. Women's tournament, I'm sorry, but you know, the women's tournament has all the juice right now. It does. Like Caitlin Clark, you know, getting offered money to sign with the Big Three. What's going on with LSU and Mulkey? We'll talk about that later. As that I can't wait for that Washington Post piece to come out about Kim Mulkey. She was, ooh, she was, had her, you know, hair in a bunch, to say the least. She was heated about that article that's going to come out. I don't know when it's going to come out, but I can't wait for it. I absolutely can't wait for it to come out. But looking at the men's bracket, you know, how many teams could win it? You know, I listen, you have all number one seeds are left. You have all the number two seeds are left, are still there. Like you have all, with the exception of yeah, you have all the number two seeds. So all the number one seeds are still alive. All four number two seeds are still alive. You know, Creighton, Tennessee should could be interesting. Look at the 2-3 games. North Carolina, Alabama should be fun. They played a wild game last at the last year. They played a wild game at the beginning of last season that went to like quadruple overtime. That was last season, not this past season. Of course, everybody's looking ahead, possibly for North Carolina, Arizona. Caleb Love, who left North Carolina to go to Arizona, or went to Michigan, then went to Arizona. For Gonzaga, could this be the year Gonzaga? I mean, Gonzaga wasn't expected to do much this year, but they had, handled Kansas in the weekend. Listen, it does look like UConn's tournament to lose, but I'm not gonna say UConn is this dominant team. But it really, I again, considering how many one seeds are left, top, like you have really like a number of top seeds left, and I don't just is it doesn't feel like it just doesn't feel like the juice is there. There's no, to me, compelling stories right now in the Sweet 16. Like I that just jump out. I'm sorry. Maybe if we get, I'm looking, Arizona, North Carolina will be fun. Purdue, I guess if you get Purdue, Tennessee, I don't, UConn, San Diego State doesn't do it for me. This Houston Duke game should be very interesting. That'll be probably one of the top Sweet 16 games. Maybe now, if you get NC State Duke, that'll be fun. NC State Duke, ACC, the right to go to the Final Four. But the rest of these matchups are just not, I'm not enamored with them. I'm sorry. As in comparisons to the women's tournament, like the men's this year, the men, I mentioned this earlier, couple the last podcast, the women's tournament has all, like right now, and you look at the bracket in the women's tournament, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, those they're still alive. You're gonna get South Carolina still undefeated, so it is going, like, yeah. You have a chance for it. Again, LSU, we are one game away from LSU and Iowa. We're one game away from that. Iowa has Colorado. LSU has UCLA, which won't be easy. So one game away from that. South Carolina, again, still undefeated. So again, you still have the most compelling story, and UConn is still alive, by the way, for the women's, in terms of the women's, but the most compelling story is, again, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, and South Carolina being undefeated are to me more, way more interesting at this point than anything that's happening in the men's. Though I'm probably shortchanging Connecticut, considering that they'll be the first team to win back-to-backs since going back to Florida in 2006, 2007. So I'll probably short-siding Connecticut a little bit. Just a little bit. But the tournament this weekend was okay for the most part, but I think that again for this year that the especially moving forward, if we get these top matchups in the women's, that the women's are going to be the ones that people are paying the most attention to. Who won the week? Minnesota Timberwolves. They're playing great basketball right now. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games. They've had a litany of injuries. We've seen them have games where they've had no Towns, no Gobert. Even their losses have been relatively close losses. They had a close loss to Denver last week where Anthony Edwards almost tied the game with a 3-point shot. They have won five out of their last six games. And right now, I think Karl Towns will be back. Karl Towns probably won't be back in the regular season, but they're looking at him as at the first round, coming back around the first round of the playoffs. This is a team that the more and more I watch them, the more and more I'm convinced if Towns is right, that they could possibly get to the NBA Finals. Like is like they, I think that they, to me, when I look at the landscape of the Western Conference, clearly in terms of matchups and things and what have you, clearly, I think they are the best possible. They are the most formidable matchup for the Denver Nuggets. When you look at sides, look at how big their wings are in terms of defending, the Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. They have the matchup with Denver. versus in comparison to everybody else. I don't think anybody else, I mean, maybe the Clippers to a lesser extent, but I think Minnesota, I've been really impressed with them during this stretch when things could have went left. I mean, they're still in contention for a number one seed without calling Anthony Townsend game. Gobert's missed some games as well. At one point, you had Luke Garza playing center for them because they were down so many big men. Anthony Edwards has been, of course, spectacular over the course of this stretch. They have some depth with some of their guard play, with some of their wings, with McDaniels and guys like that. They're going to again. I think that they are the biggest threat. I know that they are the biggest threat to me to between them and the Denver Nuggets. That they're the biggest threat to Denver, to be honest with you. So they win the week as we head towards April in the NBA, and really we are down, you know, in the stretch run as we near the playoffs in the NBA. Real thoughts. We'll wrap it up with some real thoughts. We're talking about The Breakfast Club, and not the movie that came out in 1985. I'm talking about The Breakfast Club, the radio show. If you notice, again, I haven't consistently watched The Breakfast Club probably in like 3 years, to be perfectly honest with you. But you know, I have, you know, I subscribe to them on YouTube, on YouTube, so I know stuff when, you know, clips come on, things of that nature. But what I have noticed is who they've been letting on their platform as far as politically in the last 3 to 4 months, or even maybe going back further than that. You talk about Candace Owens, Piers Morgan, Vivek Ramaswamy, one lady, Nikki Haley. Okay. Now, so they've been having these right wingers, and a lot of problems that people have had with these interviews is that they're not being challenged by any of the hosts, in regards to Charlamagne, DJ Envy, or Just Hilarious. Now, the one time that I did see them challenge Ramaswamy, that he was challenged by Tessa Figaro, who was a tremendous, and she's not a reporter, but she does front page news. She, of course, does her own thing, a lot of grassroots stuff, Push the Line, like, does a lot of great work in the community, has her own podcast, what have you. So, and you've seen her on Fox countless times. She's the one reputable type journalist. And now she's not a reporter, but type. She's the one that can go, that could really, she's into the politics. She's doing the work every day. So she has the cachet to challenge during these interviews. But, you know, she's not really a part of the interviews per se. I mean, we're talking Charlamagne and DJ Envy. They are in the Breakfast Club. So what's happened to the Breakfast Club is, first of all, it's not the same show since, let's be honest, since Angela Lee departed, Yee, excuse me, Yee departed the show in, you know, last in 2022, December of 2022. She has, you know, she's had her own show, nationally syndicated, way up on, on the same network, the iHeart Network, what have you. So you lose her, you go through a whole, they go through a whole 2023 with a bunch of guest hosts, you know, Claudia Jordan, Loren, Just Hilarious, a number of guest hosts, you know, a number of guest hosts, friends of Charlamagne, people, we've seen Tiffany Cross, we've seen Angela Rye, you know, a number of guest hosts over the course of the year, Lauren LaRosa, excuse me, who I thought might have a chance to get it. But anyway, they settle in on Just Hilarious. And again, there was a time where you never took the Breakfast Club too serious as far as, okay, when they started getting expanded to politics, they would somewhat push back on candidates who would come on the show. But they were sung Charlamagne, Angela Yee, Angela Yee, they would, we know, because these are not, they're not political people, okay? They're not pure journalists from that standpoint. But they would somewhat, there would be a little pushback as far as when it came to these interviews. Now, it's like, it's whatever as far as allowing you know, a Candace Owens allowing other right wingers to come on there and spew just bullshit and disinformation. And the Candace Owens is just dangerous. It's actually just dangerous. Some of the stuff that, you know, some of the clips and stuff that I saw, I didn't watch the entire interview, but I watched a number of clips in where they just didn't challenge her at all. And, you know, Charlamagne, who prides himself on transitioning, you know, not being into the messy shit no more, not doing those, not, you know, asking just disrespectful questions to women and some of the earlier shit in his early days with the Breakfast Club. And, you know, he's been talked about evolution and all this other stuff, the mental health stuff, came out with books. But in the last couple of years, he really, you know, had been on a number of political shows. And again, I'm not looking at him like I would view a pure journalist or a guy like Roland Barthes. I understand that. But Charlamagne is a lot smarter than what people think he is. Okay, he's well read. He knows what's going on in amongst the politics to ask questions to somewhat push Candace Owens. But I think what has happened is you get to a point to where it just becomes about clicks, and it just becomes about what is moving the needle. And right now, these right wingers are moving the needle. They are Fox News is by far the number one watched cable network channels out of all news channels. It's not even close. Fox is they are by far. You combine MSNBC, CNN, and combined don't do Fox News numbers. So I think the Breakfast Club kind of saw that and says, hey, okay, you lose Angela Yee. You can't replace her. Jessica Larry is not Angela Yee. All due respect to her, she's not. Angela Yee is a Hall of Fame radio broadcaster. Like, she's a Hall of Famer. You don't replace Yee. You're not going to just, they're not just Angela Yee's falling off trees. It's just not. But what you can do is you can kind of shift the show into being, you know, especially with the election coming up, you can kind of shift the show into being more sensational. They're still going to do interviews or entertainment, but as far as from a political standpoint, you know, get these candidates to come up here, let them say whatever, and do just, you know, do billions and millions of views and again, add to their base, so to speak, and their clientele, as far as listeners and what have you. Because the majority of people that are listening to The Breakfast Club don't care about misinformation or disinformation or not looking for pure journalism. They want to be entertained. They're not going to fact check. They're not going to do that. This is not the majority of the people that listen. Go look at the comments. They're applauding Candace Owens. They're giving... they're, you know, saying Victor Ramaswamy watched, you know, Tesla and Figaro, which he, by the way, he did during that interview a few months ago. She just owned him. And like, if you go back and watch that interview, she destroyed him, just completely destroyed him and exposed him for what we already know he is, a fake Trump wannabe who really is saying a whole bunch of nothing and saying a bunch of shit that just doesn't make sense. There was a time when I rocked hard with the Breakfast Club. I thought outside of with the car and Sam Bourne show that I grew up with, that it was one of the best morning shows that I've ever heard, that I had ever heard. But that's this version of the Breakfast Club versus the one with Angela Yee is just not the same. It's just not. They could not replace her. And it has not been the same show since. So if you're wondering what's going on with the show, that is what's going on with the show. Like, it's just that simple. There was no replacing her. And, you know, again, you don't lose that type of talent and fill it and replace it with another radio personality that even, like, I mean, it could, like I said, their best bet in terms of if they wanted someone who I think could come close to that, it probably would have been Claudia Jordan, considering her vast knowledge of radio and how long she's been in the game. They wanted somebody Probably a little bit younger, probably a little bit more connected to the culture as far as she's, hilarious, just hilarious, is a comedian. She's younger. Has a relationship, great relationship with Charlamagne, of course. Yes, she has a podcast on his network, the Black Effects, Black Effect, excuse me, Black Effect Podcast Network. So, they went that way, but I think overall, Claudia Jordan probably would have been the bet, probably would have been the more the better move from a standpoint of credibility for the show. Right now, the show is just it's all over the place. It's not it's not watchable. Like, it's really not. I don't even watch any segments for the Breakfast Club. It's just not watchable or not listenable for me personally. And again, I was a huge fan of it, especially during the pandemic. I thought they did some of their best radio during the pandemic, to be honest with you. But now that day is gone. It's gone. It's just gone. It's just gone. Again, they had a run, but they came on 2010, 13, 14 years. Nothing lasts forever. But they're absolutely falling, and they're falling hard right now to me. And I don't care what the numbers say. I'm just talking about the quality of the product, the quality of, and just how much they're allowing with some of these candidates. And it's really, again, it's dangerous for black. It's really a shame for black media to allow candidates who don't give a shit about black people for the most part. Some of these candidates that they've had on do not, and honestly, don't give a shit about black people, the black people, the community, the culture, or whatever. Or they want to use the culture to try to help to get them elected. But as far as policies and things of that nature, these candidates could care less. And again, to not challenge them about some of their issues or some of their dis or disinformation is really reckless on the really reckless by the Breakfast Club. So we have a situation where in hip hop, very interesting weekend, you had Kendrick dropping a verse on Future and Metro Boom. Boom and Future's album this past weekend called Like That, album of course is called We Don't Trust You. Kendrick comes at Drake and J. Cole in one swoop. The Kendrick and J. Cole never really, I don't think, ever had a history of any real beef. The Kendrick Drake thing has been going on for like over a decade now. And I think right now it's going to be interesting to see. First of all, people want to know, well, why would Kendrick do it now? I read an article saying that this thing should have happened. Basically, kind of comparing this like Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, that this thing should have happened like 10 years ago. I would say, let's hold the brakes on that, because I understand that they're both like around 36, 37 years old. But the reason why you do it now, if you're Kendrick, is you want to draw Drake into a battle, right? Because it is the last thing for Kendrick Lamar to do in his career. He's done everything: awards, critical acclaim, commercial acclaim, sold out concerts. So he's done everything. Came out with classic albums, taking down Drake, who, despite everybody, see, so hip hop, this is the part of hip hop that I particularly don't care for. It is regarded that these are the three names that stand out in this generation: Drake, Kendrick, Cole. Yeah, these are the three. Like, they call it the big three. I'm like Kendrick. I don't think there's a big three. There's Kendrick and everybody else. I hold Kendrick in regard the same regard as I hold Dave Chappelle, in terms of as when you compare him to other comedians. Like, there's Chappelle, then everybody else. And the next person is a distant second. The next rapper, whether who you ever want to say, Drake, Cole, whoever, is a distant second or distant third. Let me put that out right out. Let me put that out there. And for all you Drake fans, want to compare hits and album sales, I you really want to compare albums? Like we don't have want to have that conversation. You want to compare Kendrick's body of work to Drake's body of work in terms of albums, because it's not comparable. Quantity does not equal quality. Drake drops a lot of shit. It doesn't, you know, some of it sticks, some of it doesn't. Kendrick has not missed in his career. So for Kendrick to come out with this, it's a reminder, yeah, I'm still the best, and these motherfuckers is not as good as me. I just want to remind y'all. But also, he wants Drake. He wants Drake. He basically said everything but Drake's name. This was not a subliminal at all. This was like he called his song out. Called a song that Drake made with J. Cole. But yeah, first person shooter. So he wants Drake. Now, if you're Drake, you are a battle tested. You can say what you want about Drake. Drake can spit when he wants to. That's the frustrating part about Drake. That Drake, I know, listen, I'm not a Drake fan by any stretch of imagination. I'm not. I'll be first to admit. But when he wants to, he can get busy. Make no mistake about it. We seen it, saw it against Pusha, we saw it against Meek Mill. Drake can get busy when he wants to. But he's chosen to be, you know, he's chosen stardom and riches, and you know, he's gonna be a billionaire before not too long. It's not that far away from that. That's gonna happen. He'll you know, join Jay-Z and you know, and Diddy as, you know, rap billionaires soon enough. And he has been on top of the game as far as like in terms of being the biggest star for well over a decade now. Like he's held that title for longer than anybody has as far as being the biggest name in hip hop. He's been the biggest name in hip hop for over a decade, period. Now, being the biggest name versus best rapper, that's a whole two different conversation. Never been the best rapper, but he is the biggest name. That goes without saying. If you're Drake, you have to take this challenge, and you have like, just like this is the final frontier for Kendrick. This would be like, again, if Drake comes back and washes Kendrick with a verse, will I put him over Kendrick? No, but it's going to be very hard to tell any Drake fan, or it'll be very, very hard. It would be a devastating loss for Kendrick if Drake came back and washed him in a battle. If he came back and washed him in a battle, this is almost, I mean, Drake has to come back with something. And again, he doesn't, he can wait. He should wait, by the way. He absolutely should wait. But to me, this is the final thing for him. So it's interesting. You have these two iconic, these two legendary hip hop artists, who are the absolute polar opposite of each other, not in terms of style, but in terms of just personality, in terms of just who they are as people. You know, Drake is lives on the gram. Kendrick Lamar, you know, like we rarely see Kendrick Lamar. Like he's not somebody's gonna post in social media. He's not somebody that's going to do things for that. You know, you're not gonna see Kendrick Lamar on YouTube, but doing, you know, doing anything. Doing things to draw attention to himself. That's just not who he is. Drake, again, ultimately, Drake is a guy. Drake wants us talking about him 24/7. That's who he is. But the one thing they don't have, oh, in terms of they're still missing that one thing. Drake with the classic album, Kendrick, you know, taking down Drake from that standpoint. Now, this was an opening salvo. I like to like the verse was fine. It was not a this verse that Kendrick had was fine. It was good. It does not make it, you know, it's not something like it was not a career ending verse in Drake's career with this. It's nice. It's very good. Very good. It was a great verse. It was a great verse. It was nice. It was a nice verse. But Drake has to come back. Like he has, like if you're Drake, you have been presented an opportunity to basically tell the hip hop heads, and in terms of the purists, the hip hop purists, to basically tell them to shut the fuck up. And I mean, and I'm one of them. If Drake comes back with a verse or with a song, and is able to go toe to toe and or even wash Kendrick Lamar, which I don't think is going to happen. But if he comes back and bat, even if they go, if they have a battle and it produces a classic album from Drake, that takes his standing to a whole nother level. I will never believe that Drake is better than Kendrick Lamar. Me personally, but you will. There's a community that has Drake on this level already, who are starving or something like for Drake to like to take to combat Kendrick Lamar to prove that he's at that level lyrically and from an artistry standpoint. There's a community that's starving for that. Again, this for Ken, this is bigger for Drake than it is for Kendrick. I think for Kendrick, taking out Drake would mean what we already know. He's clearly a better rapper. So this wasn't a must for him, but this is, you know, when you're at that level, when, you know, rap is such a competitive sport, and so it's so competitive. Like comedy is so, these guys and women, these guys and young ladies are highly competitive. These are some of the most competitive people in the world in terms of rap. You have to be, or in terms of comedy, you have to be. You have to be at that. You have to be to go for the go for the to go for somebody's throat. You have to be that to get to this level. So this is the battle that hip hop absolutely needs. As far as J. Cole, I don't know where he fits in, to be honest with you. Like, he kind of is seemingly to me, I never known J. Cole as a battle rapper, as somebody who, you know, would even has that mentality. I mean, J. Cole is nice. We know J. Cole is nice, but I just never, I don't know if this is his lane per se. We'll see. Maybe he could surprise us, but this to me is about Drake and Kendrick. Period. This is about Drake and Kendrick. All due respect to Cole. That's gonna wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. Enjoy the rest of your week.